is Danny and Dusty.
What in God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
With Danny Murray and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
What ruckus? I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app.
Describe the ruckus, sir.
And 1080.
Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horns.
The Fan.
Hour number three here on a Tuesday afternoon in Danny and Dusty. Whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along YouTube.com/1080 AM The Fan, or Twitch.tv/1080 AM The Fan, we love you. We appreciate you.
Whoop.
There's so many ways that you can participate.
You take it all in. Yeah. Take it all
in. Or the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326, where you can chime in as well all show long.
That's right.
It's open there for you.
All over.
And we'll read it and we'll laugh at it sometimes
worldwide.
And shake our heads at it more often than not.
Absolutely.
And then there's a million things on there that we can never say.
But that's the fun part.
Because a lot of you are degenerates.
Most of you.
Most of you are. Yeah.
Hey, I got a quick correction that I got to get for the folks out here. I said don't quote me on it, and I knew it was the wrong name, and I was like, that's why I said don't quote me on it. Michael Wooten has entered the transfer portal. He was backup offensive lineman, but that was to highlight the fact that what Oregon has is guys will put their name into the transfer portal now, or their intention to put their name into the portal. It actually doesn't open until the 16th, and we'll talk about Damian Martinez and his intent, but this is the time where guys will say, yeah, it's not going well, and they'll say, my intentions are to put the name in the portal. But it was Michael Wooten who has put his name into the portal for the Oregon Ducks. This is going to happen quite a bit across the board in college football as the portal officially opens in a week. A week from today.
Dun, 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 dun. Well, not a week. Just last night, in fact, the NCAA tournament on the men's side finished with UConn handling business against Purdue, and you had Donovan Klingon battling off against Zach Edey, 7-2 against 7-4. And a lot of the draft prognosticators released their new boards. And surprise, surprise, there's risers from March Madness.
Oh, no way.
Kristen Peek at YahooSports.com now has Donovan Klingon going number 5 overall to the Portland Trailblazers. This is obviously pre-lottery. She's just slotting Donovan Klingon in at number 5. I've seen others slot in Klingon at number 5, number 6, number 7. And I guess in this draft where things are incredibly flat, you can maybe make that argument. Because he's a sophomore and he's 7'2", and he's got a thing that can get him on the floor, and that he's a plus rebounder and shot blocker. But I don't know, man. Like, as good as that run was, and as he might be a solid pro, which a solid pro in college is dominant. That's what happens. But I don't see how you can keep him on the floor. He's a zero offensively. Like, he's not as mobile as he is for a guy that's 7'2". He has almost no vertical pop, so you really can't use him as like a hard roll, lob threat kind of guy.
It looked at times as if he, and defending Zach Edey is damn near impossible.
He's big as hell and great touch.
Everybody over the last couple of years has found. It is really difficult thing to do because he is big, he uses his body. But there were times where, and this is what I thought was impressive about Edey last night, is that he has looked slow and methodical, and that just doesn't translate to the NBA. Yet, I thought that Klingon would do a better job of being that guy who can eliminate some of those moves just based on his size. And look, vertically, you saw Edey had some troubles against Klingon because of his length and his size, because the playing field was relatively level at 7'4 against 7'2". But what I was surprised with was Zach Edey was sealing and getting around Klingon more than I thought he would last night, because that was supposed to be the strength of Klingon as opposed to Edey, is that he would be quicker and he would have the ability to more or less keep Edey in front of him. And I just didn't really see it. And I thought that Edey probably did help his draft stock, because there's so few opportunities to see him against another 7-footer who is skilled or an NBA-caliber player. And I thought Edey played a hell of a game last night.
No, he did. And looking through this, let's see, Bleacher Report, Jonathan Wasserman has the Magic taking Edey at 21. On CBS Sports, let's see, they've got Edey going 22nd. On Yahoo, we're looking at, there's so many Edie references in every article now, it's unbelievable. 31st to the Raptors. So 20th to 30th, post-lottery, okay?
Okay.
As it pertains to Klingon, it's anywhere from like 5 to 9. And again, eye of the beholder type stuff. If you're in this draft, if you're a young rebuilding team, I think you're taking the biggest swings you can find. And I don't see, is no matter their size, I don't see neither Klingon or Edie as big swings. I see Sauer as a big swing. I see Topic. I see Cody Williams. I see Tijon Salloon, the French, you know, quasi big wing. Cody Williams, like those are the guys I see as big swings. They're developmental guys. And if you're in this draft and you're like, well, things are flat, you know, from whatever pick to whatever pick, from 4 to 15, I don't understand how guys like this would be elevating when you're looking at the teams that are picking at the top. The Pistons, the Blazers, the Spurs. Mm-mm. The Wizards need everything, so whatever. But
I hope they take Zach Edey or Donovan Klingon.
I mean, look, the Wizards take Donovan Klingon. Great.
More power to him.
Go get him, guys.
I think they should.
Great idea. Start that.
Klingon to Washington.
Ooh.
There we go.
From UConn to Washington?
Yeah, let's go. Klingon to Washington.
Yeah.
And I think that would be great. That's a great fit there. I think that he would be amazing, and it would obviously help the Portland Trailblazers. So, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, looking at mock drafts right now, one of the things I'm working on is charting mock draft changes over basically from the beginning of this year until now to see kind of where guys are slotted at and how it changes through the cycle. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how from now until the end, you know, the cycle, you know, we actually get to draft time, how you're going to see this methodical changes. And I don't understand how Donovan Klingon went from 12 through 15 to 5th in the NCAA tournament. This is Zach Collins redux. That's what we're seeing.
That is not a game that people should want to play.
The 35 plus games should matter significantly more than the 6.
I thought team-oriented wise, like I know that people were like, Donovan Klingon is 7'2", didn't even rebound. I thought he did a hell of a job last night, though, of trying to keep Zach Edey, because that was the primary goal, trying to keep Zach Edey away and off the boards. And the fact Edey had 10 rebounds, right? And it was walling Zach Edey off and pulling him away from the bucket. The offensive rebounds last night were incredible for UConn. And I think that whether you look at it's Klingon or Johnson, those guys, their goal was not to haul in the boards, but to just keep Zach Edey away from them. I think they did a really good job, because when you have Cam Spencer being your leading rebounder in the national championship game, not the best look for, you know, 7'2" Donovan Klingon, but it's what Danny Hurley asked them to do, right? And I think in that vein, maybe if you just have a guy, and this is to your point, though, of not a top five pick is the guy that you want to just do the junkyard dog work, right?
Yeah.
And just do what the coach has asked and do what the team needs. You need a guy who is a creator and a game changer in the top five. And maybe that just says more about where this draft is at, because you said it yesterday that there are five guys that'll be at the top of next year's draft that would probably be number one this year. And that,
yeah.
I think the rise of Klingon is probably more geared towards what we're seeing as this draft class is just not very good.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of put into perspective where Klingon sits in all this, he's 89th in rebound rate in the country, which he's still really good. It's like a 23.5% rate on the defensive side. On the offensive side, he's in the top 50. Yeah, 42nd, 13.8%, which together, very positive rebounding rate. But we're not talking about the best rebounder in college basketball.
Nope.
You're not talking about the best rim protector in the world. Like, the degrees of difference between Klingon, and I hate doing this, but Klingon, not even Wemby, but Chet, is so massive when you're talking about mobility and scheme fit. And even though the question about Chet is he's not big enough. It's like, well, Klingon's bigger. He can kind of support that. It's like, Sure, but do you want to use a top five pick on an auxiliary guy that doesn't have great scheme fit, or that you have to kind of build around, that doesn't have much offense?
You nailed it with the Zach Collins reference, because what's the thing about Klingon that everybody says? He can pull you out if he needs to. He can shoot a three. He can extend your offense out around the perimeter if you need to. He shot 1-3 last night. It did not go in. But at the same token, like, you sat there and you looked at it and you went, he has that stroke. So what people are going to do, somebody's going to find their Neil O'Shea, who's going to squint at it and say, yeah, I think we can turn him into a shooter in the NBA, where we got a 7-foot shooter now. Yeah,
and that's the thing, is Klingon hasn't shown that. Like,
what about Stephon Castle and Tristan Newton, though? Tristan Newton, who is like Mr. Big Time, just shows up in the biggest moments. This is back-to-back player of the Final Fours for him. And it was amazing to see him, after his struggles on Saturday, to kind of reboot in the way he played last night.
Yeah, no, I look at Castle, and Castle, for me, I've got sixth on my board. And I think you can make an argument that he can get into the top five. But my top five, as it sits right now, is Saar, Reza, Shea, Williams, Topich, Saloon. And the reasoning for all of those guys is, number one, the smallest guy in this group is Topich at 6'6". And it's about taking swings. Like, who has the most potential upside? Castle, I look at and go, he's kind of in the Wes Matthews mold, where it's like, can do everything but shoot. Gets after it. He's bigger than Wes was, as far as size. But if the shooting comes around, then he's a really high-level role player.
Yeah.
But I think if you're drafting top five, again, I think you have to shoot higher than that on these guys. But, yeah, and again, that's, if you're wondering why UConn was so good, I just literally mentioned two guys that are going probably top 12.
Pretty good.
So.
Pretty good.
It's a good spot to be. But that's what the NCAA tournament can do for you. It can make you a lot of money.
It's a money maker.
Fairly or unfairly.
In a worst draft that we've had in a decade.
Or it can, you know, upset some folks as far as their opinion on Kentucky's guards in Dillingham and Shepherd, who didn't show up in a game against Oakland because of a zone defense that Cal didn't have him ready for.
Oh, boy. That's
so
tough.
It's an interesting place to end up. All right, coming up next, we do have confirmation on some news as it pertains to Oregon State and, well, one more guy leaving the ship. We'll get to that out here in Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080 The Fan.
Well, I'd say the hits keep on coming, but they aren't hits. It's more like hits to the kidneys. As Oregon State is now very likely losing running back Damian Martinez. Pete Thamel has it now that Oregon State star running back Damian Martinez has informed Oregon State coaches he intends to enter the portal. He was set to make more than $400,000 to play at Oregon State this year. Shout out Pete for also highlighting that the impending transfer was first reported by Beaver Blitz.
Yeah, hey, there we go. This is a brutal loss to Oregon State. Not just the fact that Damian Martinez was the one guy who kind of stood up for the program, stood up for Oregon State and said, I'm not going anywhere. You know, he was going to ride with the Beaver Nation and with Trent Bray and this new staff. Look, the dust settles and emotions run hot when you have a coach leave and everybody's jumping ship and you want to sit there and band together. But then also you have Damian Martinez, who's looking at himself potentially being the number one running back in next year's NFL draft and going, I've got to showcase myself, and I've got to do what's best for me. And so when the portal opens on April 16th, it'll be no surprise to anybody that he does enter the transfer portal. But as it hits Oregon State even worse, you go from, all right, hey, we still have Josh Gray, we still have Grant Stark, we got a couple of transfers out of the portal who have at least played Pac-12 football, despite the fact that they were at Colorado and their offensive line was a train wreck. We could be okay. Well, now you lose that 1,000-yard rusher from this offense from a year ago. Would you care to guess how many yards Oregon State returns of receiving and rushing from a year ago?
Combined,
would you, how many yards return
400
for the Oregon State Beavers?
400.
No, it's 598 total yards.
I was going to say 500, but I feel like I was overselling it.
That return for Oregon State. And when you think of it in these terms, 78 yards rushing from Isaiah Newell. Jake Rochelle, 34 yards rushing. Okay, that's the territory that we're operating in here. As far as receiving yards go, I mean, you have to go way down the board to find your top leading receiver because Silas Bolden, Anthony Gould, Jack Velling, Josiah Irish, it's Jimmy Vaslin, who is your leading returning receiver, 154 yards last year. Like that, I mean, and look, you can go to the portal, you can try to put Band-Aids over stuff, but having guys returning, it does matter. It does matter. Because, I mean, look what Deion did, right? He overhauled his entire roster at Colorado, brought in more transfers than we've ever seen. And sure, it got a lot of hype out the gate, but then they entered Pac-12 play and they got their teeth kicked in. That's the world that you're living in, right? Mm-hmm. Is like if you're thinking we're just going to put Band-Aid after Band-Aid after Band-Aid on it, it's not how you build a winning team. And sure, with their schedule that they have, it's not going to be a barren wasteland. They'll pick up a couple of wins. They'll pick up some wins. But if this is not the end of guys entering the portal for Oregon State,
good God,
that's your major concern. That is you're sitting there and you're just shaking your head going, when does this end for us? And that sucks for Oregon State fans, the guys who did stick around. This is a massive hit for the Beavers. To lose Damian Martinez, that's the one guy that had the full-throated support of the staff mm-hmm. and the program.
I'm not surprised by this, not to say that, oh, I saw this coming. It's more of like, when you saw what Damian Martinez looked around and saw.
Well, no, I said this when Jonathan Smith left, right? It was everybody's going to want to pull together and band together. But then it's usually a couple of days, a couple of weeks, guys start looking around and you're going, this is not.
And it's not
good.
Just looking around. Other schools are calling in.
You're emotional about your program because mm-hmm. it is their program. There's a reason why they went there. But then reality sets in.
Mm-hmm.
And for Damian Martinez, I give the dude credit. And him staying, it went a long way with salvaging whatever they could of their recruiting class. And staying to this point, it's a move which I do commend him for it. But at the same time, he knows he's a hot commodity and a valuable asset. And there's going to be a ton of programs that look around their running back rooms after spring ball and they say, we need a 1,000-yard rusher.
We can go get one of the best running backs in the country.
We could
go
out and get RB1.
Yeah.
And we can ride with him.
I mean, that's the thing is, Martinez is a guy going into the draft next cycle who, you know, again, knocking on wood, barring if he stays healthy, he's a chance to be the top running back drafted.
Yep.
If you're a big school and you can just go snatch that up, yeah. Here's the thing. Oregon State could be entirely fine right now. Jonathan Smith stays. Everybody stays. Aiden Childs stays. They have money. And Damian Martinez could still be gone.
Yes.
Like that's the thing is, like, he's the kind of guy that, and again, I'm not talking about his character. I'm talking about him as a player.
Special player.
He is a number one player in the country at his position, or a potential number one player at his position in the country. Georgia, Oregon, Michigan, Ohio, hell, Michigan. They could come calling right now and go, hey, do you want to be the next guy that fills in here?
I mean, I there's a lot of people that are like, ouch, what if the Ducks pick him up? Sorry, Beef Sands. Like, we've had a lot of that.
I don't think stylistically he
is coming in.
Fits that.
That running back room is
pretty
loaded.
Yeah.
At Oregon with Whittington, Jordan James. They got the D2 National Player of the Year, who, by all accounts, has been very solid in Jay Harris. At running back, like they've got Jaden Lamar is in that backfield as well. Their running back room is very large.
Jordan James is about to explode.
Yeah, and remember how good Whittington was before he got hurt.
Before he got dinged up, yeah.
I mean, in that Colorado game, in a game that was already getting out of hand, took a shot on the sideline and boom. But he this season, I don't think Damian Martinez goes to Oregon. If you're Michigan, you pick up that phone because if there's one person based on who was the most upset after Jonathan Smith left who wants to kick in Michigan State's teeth, it's probably Damien Martinez.
Mm-hmm. And they got a Blake Corum-sized hole to fill.
He is from Texas, so don't rule the Longhorns out of it. Sark likes to acquire talent like Infinity Stones.
And he's done pretty well with running backs.
He's really damn good.
They run a gap scheme, which is going to fit what Martinez does. Downhill. Martinez wants to get downhill. Yeah. He wants to use his vision. It's not like
one cut pop.
Some of the other schools that are running more outside zone. Yeah. He is built to run in between the tackles. That would be a good system that fits him. Actually, believe it or not, the system that Lincoln Riley runs when it comes to running the football, it is all based on power scheme. Counter, so gap scheme, and a little bit of duo as well. He would actually do very well in that system as well.
Yeah, I mean, what's his name? Former Duck.
Die.
Die was a monster at SC with Lincoln in year one. So speaking of SC, Bear Alexander, former five-star player, also entering the transfer portal. Fun note, he's going to his seventh school in 7 years.
Yeah, he went to four different high schools. And now he is going. He will enter the transfer portal, and he's going to go to another school. It'll be seven schools in 7 years:
Terrell High School, Ryan High School, IMG Academy, Skyline, Georgia, USC, and to be determined.
And I will say, run as fast as you can. That is red flag city.
Yeah.
That I mean, there are no bigger red flags than that right there.
Yeah.
Seven schools in 7 years is wild. But the portal is ruining college football. This dude went to four different high schools. Yeah. So
it's happening long before the portal.
Yep.
All right, coming up next, which NFL team has the most pressure to knock it out of the park in the draft, which is, again, just over 2 weeks away. We'll get to that. But first, here's Big Will Betts with the Sports Center update.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
Well, thanks to Souk, we kept the Oregon State conversation going, and we're going to keep it going here, thanks to the Vancouver Ford text line.
Yeah. Thanks to Souk. What?
Well, we continue talking about the transition through this. The text, Dan got a $400,000 bag from OSU. Pete Thamel tweeted, it's not like they didn't put forth a good effort.
And I understand that from Oregon State fans where it's – you're like, hey, we tried to give him $400,000. I think that that's more alarming than anything else.
That the money didn't solve the problem.
It's getting dumped and saying, it's not you, it's me, right? They are sitting there and what Damien Martinez is saying is like, hey, I understand you gave me the $400,000. Seemingly, that's what players want. And I keep telling people this about whether it's recruiting or whether it's about the transfer portal. Relationships matter. They matter a ton. Like, if you don't think, and everybody's like, well, you just offer them the most money. No, because guess who offers a ton of money? It's Oregon, it's Texas, it's Alabama, it's Georgia, it's Tennessee, it's Ohio State, it's Michigan, it's Miami. Mm-hmm. There is no shortage of programs that will offer you a buttload of money. You can get money at a lot of schools around college football.
I like a buttload.
We can go through over 10 schools just right off the top that can offer you the moon money-wise. There is more there, people. Like, does it start a conversation? Absolutely it does. Can it help you close and get you over the top? Absolutely it can. But the money is a part of a greater conversation here. Because if you have a guy who's only in it for money, they're going to be gone. And they will leave you. Eventually, Bear Alexander, seven schools, 7 years. Right?
I mean, that guy was catching bags in high school.
Now, with Damien Martinez, he's sitting there, and he took a look around it, and he said, whether it's the roster, whether it is the staff, we don't know this right now, right? But he took a look, because we know how he feels about Oregon State University as a whole, right? We know. He told us. He told us all. He has a lot of love and a lot of passion for Oregon State because they're the school that took the flyer on him out of high school when he was undervalued and under-recruited, and they got on him early. They landed him, and he was a star, and he was really damn good.
But also, he's a 20-year-old kid who has one opportunity to be successful in playing behind a line. Look, Gray's a stud. Let's see if he's there. And likelihood he's not. If you're a running back.
Right now, Oregon State is not a place that
you want to be.
If you are a top-level draft prospect, it's not going to be a place where you are going to shine.
It's not going to help your draft stock. And if you're talking about a position in running back where you're splitting hairs. Always. You're always splitting hairs about what you can or can't do. And if you're playing behind the eight ball at Oregon State, where 2, 3, 4 years ago, up until this past year, had a phenomenal offensive line, sure, it makes sense, even if they're not this national powerhouse. If you're a running back, go to Oregon State.
The truth is going to come out about what led to him saying, I didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Will he publicly bash Oregon State? I doubt it.
No.
I mean, they treated him really well. We know how he cares about the university. But they will get to the bottom of this, and it may not be what Oregon State fans want to hear. You obviously didn't want to hear this news today that Damian Martinez is leaving Oregon State and entering the transfer portal. But at the same time, we'll eventually find out what led to it, whether it is the uncertainty around this next season in the level of play in some of the teams that you're playing, whether it is maybe he took a look at that offense and said, nope, I can't do this. I'm not going to do it. They're going to get me hurt. That is a real possibility. There's also the possibility that maybe it is, you know, whether it's the coaching staff or, you know, the way that the offense has shifted with Ryan Gunderson as a play caller, as opposed to having Jonathan Smith as your play caller. There could be it could be all of these things that are wrapped into Damian Martinez's decision. But the reality of it is that the B-fans got dumped today by somebody they loved, and that sucks for them. Like, that's terrible. And then, you know, there's a lot of people like, this is why I'm going to be done with college sports after this baseball season. When the Beavs start playing and they play Idaho State, I doubt you're going to be done.
I'll be watching.
Yeah, well, I doubt you're going to be done. And this is going to be the big problem, is that if that happens and people aren't showing up to the newly renovated Research Stadium, which has just been around for 1 year with both sides completed, and people aren't watching their games on TV, they will lose that seat at the table, and that's going to be one that is going to be really tough to earn back.
That's the thing is, is the door closed?
No, it's not yet.
What's the path?
Well, the Super League would be one, because the Super League would include Washington State and Oregon State, as they were kind of releasing last week.
How do you hold on for the next 2 years?
That is one. Well, with the money from the Pac-12.
No, but I mean, like, how are you a functional program over the next 2 years?
Well, you have to win games. And that's the thing, is you have to win football games. Because here's the thing. It's like Oregon State fans are like, we got kicked to the side, and I get it. You feel beat down. But don't tell that to Boise State fans that started as a junior college and then went to D2 and then the FCS and then to the FBS. And that place is sold out every single week, and they are a viable football program. There is a path, but you can't have your entire fan base turn your back on you. Like, that's full stop, because why is that attractive to anybody?
Or look at the SMU model, too. Like, SMU was on the outside looking in.
Rally the troops.
Like, let's not say the ACC is perfect. I'm sure they don't feel 100% amazing about where they're at, but they went from a group of five to now they are in the Power Four. Well, and that came from boosters, right? So Oregon State would have to do the same, but that's an option as well. Like, bide your time, get your money right, and when the moment is there, you have to pounce.
Utah, BYU, Central Florida, Cincinnati, Houston, they've all created their own path. SMU, as you just mentioned, they've all created their own path to get there, but it took not a abandoning of ship, but circling the wagons. And
also,
that's what Oregon State needs, and it sucks to say, like, but if you ever want to get back, that's what you have to do.
It's also a massive infusion of cash.
Yeah.
For all of those schools, where Oregon State has yet to see that.
Well,
they've got a good infusion from the NCAA tournament money, the remaining Pac-12 money.
Their starting ground is a lot better than some of the others, especially like a Central Florida. Like,
sure.
Central Florida had to prove it, and then they did. They pounced on it, and that's when they got their influx of money, is when all of a sudden you start winning football games, and boom, you have your fake-ass national title, Scott Frost.
Well, the difference is that Oregon State, that they have won games, and they still haven't gotten that big infusion of cash.
But this is your time to get your rallying cry. But come to the table now, or it won't matter.
This is one that, with Oregon State, they have gotten an infusion of cash. It started in 2000, and they got a bump, and then when the Gary Anderson debacle happened, and that was the worst Power 5 program in the country, they got an infusion of cash, and they did a really good job of injecting money into that program to say, we don't want to be here anymore. We do not want to be here anymore. And that's one thing that they have gotten small little jabs in the arm, but they need a big old steroid shot. They need it right in the rear. And like this text, BSU and OSU aren't comparable. One built up and one had it, but it got ripped away. They are. If you lose your fans, you are actually at a better place to start this thing because you have a fan base and you have that Power 5 money infusion that is already going to be there. Because the Pac-12 is dissipating. There's $100 million over the next 2 years going to the Cougs and the Beavs.
There's some real money there. And that's the thing is, it's a life raft that it's not infinite.
No. And that's why they can't.
Like, this thing runs out of air.
You cannot have the mass exodus of fans. I know it's going to be the natural way that you want to go, but unfortunately.
It's easy to care when you're winning.
Unfortunately, the reality is that if everybody abandons ship,
mm-hmm.
and the fans turn their back on their program that they do love, and you do love it, if that happens, then everybody that left you behind is saying, see,
justified.
That's why we did it.
Yeah. It's easy to care for your team when you're winning and things are going well. It's super fun to ride the highs.
Yep.
But if you're a Beav fan and this is one of those ride of the lowest kind of situations.
Yep.
Because if you don't, like you said, not even just to see the table, it might get worse than that. You might be relegated to beyond just the next rung down.
They're not gonna drop past Mountain West territory.
But I mean, the Mountain West territory might be further removed from where it is now.
When the 12-team playoff and the cash infusion starts happening. Well, that's the uphill climb. And this is the, again, we're going through this again, but this is that worst case scenario that everybody was talking about. So,
sorry, Beavs fans. Wish we had some better news, but that's the way the cookie's crumbling right now. Hopefully that salsa money can cobble something together here over the next 2 years.
If a lot more than that. They need that NVIDIA money.
Yeah, they need that graphics card money for sure. Mining some Bitcoin. Coming up next, we'll get ready to hand you off to Isaac Asuk here on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
Now, some unfortunate news for the Portland Trailblazers. Shaden Sharp was ramping up and was hoped to be ready for at least to grab a couple games here before the end of the season. He did actually participate in live contact practices, but he just wasn't able to push through with enough games left.
All right, so get on the floor. No Shaden Sharp. And that actually does suck because you wanted to, you know, get one of the things with this injury. Dame talked about this a ton.
Nas talked about it. Everybody's talked about it.
Which is,
pushing.
You got to get through the mental hurdle of playing through this.
Well, no, yeah, the physical hurdle. Like, you develop scar tissue in the area that just takes a little while to kind of push through. It's awkward and it's uncomfortable, and you just going to kind of get through it. It sounds like if the Blazers had, like, four or five more games remaining, let's say they had 8, 9, 10 left, he might give it a go. Just he would get more opportunities to get out there and kind of work through it.
Yeah,
that he might have an opportunity, but that's with only four left, it's just not going to happen.
And it's a lost season.
Yeah,
it's a lost season.
It is.
And that's
Ant's injury, Scoot's injury, Shaden's injuries.
Well, I think it's a lost season for him specifically. Like we all knew that this was going to be a lost season when it started, but the fact that Shaden Sharp, we've seen flashes, but again, we don't see consistency, and this could have been a year. With everything else that was going on with this team in this roster, that you could have seen his development and watched him grow a little bit, but nothing. We get zip, zero, zilch, nada.
I think you get a little taste. That was about it. You got to see him as the lead guy for a little bit, and so that's the kind of thing that you explore this week. Well, no.
It's a lost. That's lost.
Sure, though. That's fine, but you have to be able to take something from this, because if you don't, then you're just saying that you literally just threw a year out, because you did get 32 games worth of data on it. It's not enough. It's not great. You want more always. But the thing you do have to take from this, okay, we did get X, Y, and Z. So here's the things that we take from that versus on top of his rookie year, and we go, these are the things that we want him working on this summer. Because everybody's like, well, the growth in the season, most of your growth isn't in season. Most of your growth and the things that you work on are off season. The in season is about refining and developing the little things, the timing, the reps, like those things. All of that comes from working through things in the off season over and over and over again. Can Shaden Sharp develop his handle? Can Shaden Sharp be a guy that you don't need to tell to shoot? Can Shaden Sharp develop some aggressiveness going downhill and attacking the rim? Like, those are the things that maybe you would hope to get better answers to this season that you just didn't get the opportunity to see in the final remaining, 80 games or 50 games.
I mean, we have only seen him play 112 games in his career, and he's entering year three. Right?
Yeah, he's going into year three, which is typically your big breakout season.
And last year, what we knew and what we saw, a lot of those were minutes with nobody else around him on the floor, and a lot of those were wasted minutes last year's rookie year, and that's the thing I say, that this is a wasted season, is because we really haven't, how many games have we seen with Shaden Sharp where he is actually around NBA caliber, starting caliber players? How many games of those 112?
Not many.
Not
probably 35 to 40.
And so I go, how much do we really know? You know? And that's the big question, that's where I see it as a waste season. You're right. I mean, we did see a lot of those flashes and a lot of those things that he can work out over the course of this offseason, but do we really know what he needs to fine tune when we haven't really seen him with,
I think so,
with the talent that's commiserate, because he's not a number one and he's not a number two.
Well, the thing is, I don't think we know what he is.
That's regardless
of that. But no, I mean, with guys that come in the league at 19 years old, you don't. He's 21 years old. He's a baby. He's a little baby. Remember, the last competitive basketball he played before he came to the NBA was in the EYBL. He didn't go to college. There's no development. There's nothing up there.
And that's what sucks about this whole year for him.
And it does.
Like, and that's my point. Yeah. Is like, he hasn't played a lot of basketball.
But that's my point. I think you understand the general idea of what he needs to work on.
Yeah.
And then whether or not he's above average rotation player, a starting caliber player, a near star, all star, all NBA, like, that stuff's going to sort itself out. And most guys who reach that level, it takes 6-7 years. Like, the occasional generational guys like Zion, LeBron, Wemby, they do it in year one.
Yeah.
They do it in year one. That's not the norm, even for the best. I mean, go look back at some of the best, you know, rookie or best players of all time at their rookie first, second, third, fourth years. It just takes a while, especially for the kids. But it does suck that he's not coming back.
Can't wait to get another 19-year-old, right? No 19-year-olds. Unless it's Ariza Shea.
He's 18.
Great.
Yeah. A lot of kids in this draft.
All right. Well, hey, That'll do it for us. You are out tomorrow. You will be.
I am out tomorrow.
You're going to be looking at all the guys the Blazers will draft 2025.
Next year.
All right, my man.
Get a head start.
Have a great day tomorrow.
Thank you.
We'll see you hopefully Thursday, maybe Friday.
Thursday, yes. Friday, no.
All right.
That's how it works.
All right. Up next, you got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. It's Primetime with Isaac Atsu.
Bye.